And now back to Farmcast Radio with your host, Brian Ulmer.
We now continue with the presentation featuring former Colorado Commissioner of Agriculture Don Brown at the 2019 3R Symposium, All Roads to Heck Are Paved with Good Intentions.
And I'm sounding radical here yet today, but to a certain degree, I find it offensive that I'm open for business 7 days a week, and they're out there feeding those cattle this morning, and those mineral rights were somebody's rights, and the concept that we can take them away with a stroke of a pen by the majority who once had no interest in this land at all, absolutely none. And the thing that drives most of it is just not in my backyard. And where should we place the blame here? Is it Glenn Burroughs' fault that in the policies should say now that you don't have a right to your property rights? I don't believe so. And my biggest problem with it is the taking without compensation. I understand the cop said maybe you don't want to look at the drilling rig. I understand the concept that maybe it's noisy and maybe it's dusty. But the concept of taking without compensation because you can, might does not make right. It just makes it yours. Without compensation is the struggle I have with the policies that are currently being placed here in Colorado. I can't help but think here's one of the unintended consequences. This is out where we live in Yuma, Colorado, and you'll note that the blue house up in this corner up here is, of course, where Peggy and I live, and I absolutely no gas there, right? That's the way it's always worked in my life. No gas there, but these other homes, there's gas wells, and these are the gas wells. This is a good one. This is a dry hole. I think that's a salt water injection. But if we took the ballot initiative last fall that we had here in Colorado, 212, which failed, by the way, the voters, I mean, if you overwhelmingly got elected by 55%, they'd call it a landslide, and they defeated it. They defeated the concept that you couldn't have a well within 2,500 feet of a house here in Colorado, the voters did. And then the next morning, it was announced that the legislature was going to take care of it anyway. But the 2,500-foot setback rule in the 70s out where we live, if you would have had the 2,500-foot setback rule, we've got five houses here. Seven people live in these houses. I have including Pegs and I's because we're not in part of that field. Five houses would have canceled out 29 gas wells. Problem with minerals is they're not like the widgets. You can't move the factory. It is where it is. And what I've struggled with is the philosophy or attitude that we're supposed to let the rest of the world provide our energy sources. The problem with that is we've done that for years. We know how that works. We spend billions across the world, and we bring our young people home in boxes. I'd much rather look at a drilling rig. Everything in this room is touched by petroleum, and the concept that we're going to go to brand new clean energy in an afternoon, I'm not arguing with the concept. I understand the concept, but we can't do it in a day, we can't do it in a month, we can't do it in a year, we can't do it in a decade, we can't do it in two decades. So this is somebody that's really important to me, and what people don't understand is this is one of the consequences of irrational policies that fly outside of reality for those who don't do it for a living, who don't understand where their food or their energy comes from. Who's going to pay for Maya's school? Maya's my granddaughter, and she lives in the middle of that gas field. Choices are made, policies are driven, consequences happen. Maya doesn't get her new school. And she's sitting by my desk. This was when I was in Denver serving as commissioner, and you can see she's observing the TV. She's got her Play-Doh out. She obviously has been working with some of my books, and so life is good. But this is what we live for. This is what we're about as families. And for others to make choices so my granddaughter can't have a new school because we don't have other tax base, I struggle with that. I want to talk about food production and the policies that are driven toward it as well, and the choices that are made here in the name of public health and safety, of sustainability. I love that word when they throw it around in agriculture because I can't help but think most of us in the room have been really sustainable. We've made a living at it. We've had our farms for 100 years, and if you weren't treating your farm right and you weren't sustainable, you'd have been gone a long time ago. And if you hadn't handled the environment right, you probably wouldn't be too good at it either. And if you weren't careful with your safety, you'd be in trouble. So at the end of the day, this is the first true GMO, insulin. The true GMO that was commercially produced was insulin. And that mechanical engineer son that I was talking about, he's a diabetic. And he uses this every day. Every day. And yet we want to pick and choose which GMOs we eliminate. And we don't talk about this GMO. But if they knew about it, I think they'd eliminate it. But then where insulin comes from is cheese, cattle and pig pancreases. So now where are we going to go with that one? Advocates wouldn't like that either because we'd have to have more cattle and pigs. And, of course, cattle produce methane. You're well aware of that. They're part of the Green New Deal, right? And so we can't have more cattle, but I can't have my GMO insulin. So I'm struggling with it. And if I get more cattle, I'm going to have climate change. And I just don't know where we're going to go with this problem. And for any of you that have that figured out, let me know, because I think we need help on this one. But no one knows that GMOs are, the first one was insulin. And it's used every day in this nation. And we'll go to the next next slide, which talks a little bit about the USA has only 10 GMO foods. That's all we have. That's what we're driven toward. And every day, we save tons of pesticides when we use these, with far less CO2 is released. Everybody's going to say, well, Don, you're a big GMO advocate. No, I'm not a GMO advocate. I'm not a GMO advocate. I'm a keep every tool in the toolbox advocate. That I don't think policy would drive how we're going to feed the world. We have to have these tools that we're headed in a direction that tells me that we're going to have them. Because when we talk about now, you observed the list earlier, right? 10 of them. You saw insulin. Did you know that this water is non-GMO? Did you know this is a marketing tool? Did you know that this is a concept used to increase sales? This is like saying my water is wetter than your water. What this does in society is plants a seed. Pretty soon we're driving everything by emotions, not science. And it creates a distrust in the food system. And then the policymakers get to thinking that there is GMO and non-GMO water. And so when that's all said and done, we all pay a price here in agriculture. This is one of my favorite slides. Because we know that Boulder County, Colorado, and Boulder typically views things somewhat different on the whole than we do. They look at things differently. And their typical policy, the Boulder County Commissioners were making an effort to eliminate GMOs on their 20-some thousand acres that they owned in the county. And they had a lot of data that they presented. Well, no, they really didn't present a lot of data, but they did a study. And they don't talk about the study. As a matter of fact, you'll have a very difficult time finding the study. I found the study. CO2 loss. Carbon sequestering. If you look at the slide, the first one under the Boulder County study, look at it closely. Genetically engineered crops only release 474 pounds a year. Conventional farming releases 3,021 pounds a year. Organic releases 3,151 pounds a year. Those two combined release 6.6 times more than GE crops, meaning that they contribute far greater to climate change / global warming. Let's go to water loss. We're in the arid west. GE crops, they use 0.24 inches per pound of crop, I believe was the conventional, 2.25, organic, 2.59 inches, additional release using it. They release 10 times more water than the GE crops when it's all done because of the farming methods. At the end of the day, no one wants to talk about this very much. No one talks about it at all.
Coming up in the final segment on FarmCast Radio this weekend, we'll wrap up the presentation featuring former Colorado Commissioner of Agriculture Don Brown from the 2019 3R Symposium that took place April 11th and 12th in Windsor.
You're listening to FarmCast Radio. First Farm Bank was founded by farmers. They envisioned a bank that worked like they do,
a bank that actually makes decisions locally, not in some big headquarters several states away. A bank that's available when you need it. That's why First Farm Bank drive-ups are open 7:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Monday through Friday and 8:30 until noon on Saturday. That's also why First Farm Bank offers web and mobile banking apps giving you 24-hour access to your accounts. And we do the little things, like getting to know your name. You don't have to be a farmer to appreciate that. So whatever your profession, we invite you to stop by one of our locations, 127 22nd Street and 2939 65th Avenue in Greeley, 931 West Main Street in Sterling, or 501 East 8th Avenue in Yuma. Find out what we mean when we say hometown values and hometown strong. First Farm Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Did you know that Colorado Corn is made up of both the Colorado Corn Administrative Committee and the Colorado Corn Growers Association? The Colorado Corn Administrative Committee oversees how Colorado's corn checkoff dollars, one penny per bushel of corn produced in the state, are spent on research, market development, outreach, and other endeavors. The Colorado Corn Growers Association is comprised of dues-paying, politically active farmers focusing on policy that impacts corn production and agriculture, working to better the industry for Colorado's corn producers and protect the future of agriculture. Learn more about both organizations online at coloradocorn.com.
Encompass was something that we developed based on actually going out in the field and meeting with farmers. What's your profitability and how will that profitability change if your yields are worse than you expected, yields are better, prices are higher, or prices are lower? Things you don't have a lot of control over, but you need to understand and you need it very visible as to how that's going to affect you so that you can then pick the right tools to manage those risks that you have.
For more information about Sylvia's Financial, call Tracy Tattersall, 303-886-0102, 303-886-0102.